Here we go. It is podcasting time. Glenn Power is here from PowerWorks Garage. I'm James Pikeway. And for about the next hour, we're going to be talking to you about, well, your car and the garage and the weather and things that are getting under your skin. It's the typical show. And if you are joining us from 100.3 FM, you know what? You need to get us a question. Podaholics with a K at gmail.com. Fire it through to the station's WhatsApp. Hey, if you're listening through any of the streaming services around the globe, because that's how you found us, podaholics with a K at gmail.com. Fire the questions in, fire comments in, rate us. We look forward to hearing from you. Glenn, it's good to see you again.
Yeah, good morning. You actually mentioned Talk 100.3. We get about five or maybe six people now contact the garage that said they listened to us on there, and they seem quite well informed. So I think
despite me,
I think what we're doing is sinking in.
I ran into someone at the grocery store who heard the voice, heard me talking, and came around and said, "You're the guy on the radio." and he said, you know, he very politely pointed out that you are very knowledgeable, as in Glenn Power is very knowledgeable. Well, he looked at me. He says, "You not so much."
It's just not, I mean, I feel like he's just deliberately offending you, James.
He was provoking me. Yeah. He said it with a smile, though.
Yeah. Sometimes that's, you know, just trying to provoke you and then sue you, thinking radio personality must be loaded.
Oh, man.
Worth suing.
Only you knew. I want to jump right in because it's the time of year where two things start happening right around this time of year. One, you start thinking, maybe I need a new car. And so people start looking at the car market and seeing what's out there. The other thing that starts happening this time of year is people start realizing, oh, you know what? Maybe it's time to do some repairs. I've been putting things off. It's now well into the end of February. We're getting into the end of March, so I've dated myself. But you're getting to the time of year where people are thinking, it's time to do those repairs I've put off. Let's go get them done. And I thought we'd start off with just a little bit of a tip, a series of tips on when you're taking your vehicle to the garage. And you're going to go meet that mechanic. You're going to go meet that service manager. And you've got your pride and joy there. Tips on how to get the best service for your vehicles and get the service you need for your vehicles. And what's brought this up is talking to people who've taken their vehicles in to get work done and haven't quite got the work done that they wanted. And then after a few questions, realize, well, you didn't tell the person all the details. It's like, it's not a mystery shopper routine here. This is your vehicle.
Yeah.
So I thought, let's run through a list of this so that people could save their time, money, and get stuff done as they need it to be done. And the first thing on the list is don't be vague about the problem you've got with your car.
Yeah, I would put on there, if we're looking to get the best possible service and you know, get everything right straight away, try and make an appointment and stick to it.
Oh, there we go. So right off the bat, make that appointment.
Yeah, I mean, we...
So hold on a second. I mean, all garages do this, make appointments. You get people who make appointments and then don't show up?
Yeah, all the time. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not like a massive problem for us. I mean, when it happens to, you know, Dr. Jenna, when she could have been saving someone else's life, it's a problem when people don't cancel a doctor's appointment, but it happens to us all the time.
Dr. Jenna told me a story the other day that she had some clients who got caught in traffic. They were supposed to be there at 5:00. They showed up at 7:00. So at this moment, both of us have made the face, and I'm going, I wouldn't have been there. She goes, well, I waited.
I wouldn't have turned up 2 hours late.
Yeah.
I'd have been like, I'm sorry, I can't make it.
Yeah. Yeah. 2 hours late.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. So make appointment.
If you can, yeah. I mean, look, we PowerWorks as a business is still very much a come on down sort of deal. You know, we can only open our doors every day. We don't have billboards on the side of the road. We don't have radio adverts. We don't have any kind of marketing at all outside of word of mouth and trying to help people that we know, sort of thing. So we open the doors, and if you turn up, you turn up. We'll obviously manage your expectations in terms of, well, we are very busy today, unfortunately, so if you leave it with us, we'll try. But if you can make an appointment, make it for as early as possible. Garages are usually relatively quiet in the morning. It can be quite manic in terms of what's going on from an admin point of view. But the garage and the floor of the garage shop floor of the workshop should be relatively smooth and calm in the morning, in terms of if you're ever going to be able to just get in and get looked at straight away, that's the time. So if you are going to just drop in, try and do it first thing. But if you can make an appointment and stick to it.
And that obviously helps a garage. You know, if you've got a number, you can only accommodate so many vehicles. And if you've made an appointment, you know that you've got this vehicle coming in, so you've got that spot ready for
it. Exactly. Yeah. So we try and have it that if we're going to need to put it on a lift, for example, we can try and make sure there's a lift going to be either available at that time or very, very close to that time. And again, if you're talking about a dealership, you need to have an appointment.
Right. They don't take anything walking.
You know, they can run knowing on, they've pretty much got guaranteed business from the warranty side of it. So they know how many vehicles they're going to get every single day. So they need to take appointments. But for an independent like ourselves, still try and make an appointment, book yourself in. At the point of making that appointment, whether it be over an email, through the website, social media, even over the phone, try and talk to them and say, look, okay, this is what I want to do. Have you got roughly any idea how long you think I might have my car with you?
Right.
And then,
so it's really important at that, this is what I want to do, that whoever is bringing their vehicle in is giving the details. It's not just, you know, I kind of want to do this. Get to the specifics.
Walk right through it. So once you've got to the appointment made, and then you can understand how long you're going to be without your car, you can also ask, is there anything you need from me when I bring it in? So then when you do turn up, and it gets to the point one that you'd mentioned, not being vague about the problem, you've got everything ready. So if somebody calls me and says, I want to bring my car in, I've got a bit of a noise. Okay, great. Can you drop it off? Yeah. When? Tomorrow? Yeah, no problem. We'll see you at 8:30. Great. Can you give yourself at least 20, 30 minutes allowance so that when you get here, it's not just throw the keys at us and run away?
Which so many people do.
Yeah, yeah, and obviously everyone's busy, right? So that's why we try and say, can you try and allow for some time? And that's why one of our garages is always open on Saturday and one's always open on Sunday, so that hopefully people can use their weekends when they're not normally as busy. But we'll get a 10-minute road test with myself or DJ or the service advisor so that the customer can show us the problem that they may be experiencing. Because sometimes we drive cars differently.
Yeah.
So if you drive the Wrangler and hear a noise on it going over a certain type of road or a speed bump or a bit of rough ground or whatever, or when it's accelerating or decelerating, I might drive the Wrangler and not hear it because I don't accelerate in the same way or decelerate in the same way.
Right.
I don't use the same kind of steering. I don't take the same line through a corner. And I'm not going to necessarily hear what you're hearing. So I might hear something else, which as a technician is a problem to me, and I might recommend fixing it, but then I'll fix that. You might spend 1,000 dirhams and then come and get your car and it's got the same problem.
Yeah.
And whilst that's very unfortunate, it does happen, and there's not really much you can do if the time isn't given by the customer just to show the technician. Mm. I mean, we are mechanics and we try our best to know what we're doing, but it's not our car. We don't drive it every day.
So being really specific is important. Talking, you know, when you say, oh, I've got a sound in the engine. Okay, well, what kind of sound? What do you know, what are you hearing? Where do you think, you know, and even just where do you think it's coming from?
Yeah.
Which kind of leads into part two is, and there's a fine line between this is what I'm hearing and forming a diagnostic conclusion without possibly knowing.
Yeah, I mean, the problem nowadays is it's so easy for somebody to type into Google and get a YouTube video of some guy in a town thousands of miles away who's got a car with a problem similar to yours.
Yeah.
And then you automatically assume that that's what yours is. We've had customers that have Googled their symptoms of their vehicle issues, and
everyone does this,
and they've supplied parts based on that and just asked us to fit them.
Yeah, okay, that's taking it too far. So I might Google and look, but
it happens a lot. So we don't have a problem doing that. Of course we'll fit parts if we're requested to, but it can be a waste of your time and money. And most not all, but most diagnostic jobs would be covered by the way we operate and most other garages would operate, is that if you bring your car in and we need to check it for you, we'll check it. There'll be a checking fee of, you know, 250 dirhams or whatever it may be. When we give you an estimate, if you approve the estimate, we don't charge you therefore then for the check-in. If you take the vehicle away and don't do any work with us, obviously we're going to charge you for checking it. So to be fair, it's effectively a free check. And with that, I would say there's no real reason. Now, that to the same point, I'm not trying to say people shouldn't educate themselves. It's always good, and we've said it before. We said it in the early days.
Well, that's why we do this show.
Yeah, always try to have as much knowledge as you can and ask the right questions. It's about understanding that you're talking to the right person and they're going to do the right kind of work for you. So you don't want to go in there completely blind, and you don't want to go in there without any sort of idea. And if both of those things you can't do, you need to know that you can trust that person. Well, the only way you're going to know that you can trust them is if you've been using them for a long time and they've been doing all right for you. And if that's the case, you're probably doing all these things anyway.
The other side of it is when you bring your vehicle in, you're often seeing vehicles that have a few kilometers on the odometer, so they're not new, which means people have had their cars repaired. They've had what their pride and joy fixed multiple times, probably. Let the service advisor, let the mechanic who's taking it in, let them know what kind of things you've had done in the past, especially if from point one and two, you know, you've made your appointment, you've brought it in, you've done a little bit of research, you have a kind of an idea, or maybe it's even better, you have kind of an idea because this has happened before. Yeah. Talk to the mechanics, talk to the folks about what has already been done to your vehicle in the past.
Yeah, if you've been unfortunate enough to have a problem that you think hasn't been resolved by a place and you've taken it somewhere else,
again, which you see quite a bit of,
happens all the time. Let people know that. You know, there's nothing wrong with going to a garage and saying, look, I've been to X garage and they kind of fixed it, but it's still not right, or something else feels off. Or,
yeah, yeah.
Now, that's always valuable for us to know that, okay, you've had a noise and they changed your tires, but it's still there. Or you've had a noise and they changed your wheel bearing, it's still there. That's always, always good to know. And listen, one of the other things is don't be afraid to communicate that with the garage as well. Like if you've had a problem that you perceive to be an issue and they've taken the car and you've spent some money for them to fix something, it could have all boiled down to what we've just talked about, where they didn't have the right information and they fixed what they heard. They might not have fixed what you've heard, but you've then not showed them that. Give them a call, explain, say, look, I need to show you this noise. You haven't fixed it. I appreciate you may have changed something that might have needed to be changed, but it hasn't cured my issue. Can we go out again? Because one of the problems here is, if you take the example of, let's say, you've got a vibration in your vehicle.
Yeah.
While you're driving the vehicle, there's a vibration. So you tell the service advisor, look, when I'm driving, the whole car is vibrating. Okay. Now, that vehicle goes into the workshop. Naturally, the first thing to check would be that the wheels and tires are balanced. That's everyone's heard. And
that's 101.
Yeah, so you check it, and 95% of the time, any wheel and tire assembly that comes off of a vehicle will be out of balance, because it's only in balance on a static balancer. As soon as it goes on the road, pressures change, road surfaces change, weights fall off, things stick to the tread, the balance is thrown out by at least 5, 10, 15 grams. So all tires that go on and then back off of a car will want to be balanced again. So the tires get balanced, car's driven down the road, don't really feel a vibration. You then take the car away, you drive it how you would normally drive it, you accelerate to overtake a car and you're still feeling the vibration. Now, you go back to the workshop and say to them, look, I've still got the vibration. If you then say to them, it only happens when I accelerate, immediately takes everything away from the conversation about tires. Everyone knows then, okay, well, tires would be all the time. They're always rolling. So what do we have to deal with then when it's accelerating? So then you'll find that there's an issue with a drive shaft or a prop shaft. You might find an issue, therefore, with the transmission even. Transmissions can fail in where the drive shafts bolt in and the flanges get play. So as you accelerate, there's movement side to side.
And you get vibration
rotation
then.
On it, vibrates through the whole car.
Yeah.
Just that key bit of information of when I accelerate. Now, as I've said, you've just paid 200 dirhams to have your tyres balanced, and you might be like, come on, guys, you've just wasted 200 dirhams. But they needed balancing.
They
weren't
balancing.
Balanced for the sake of it. They were balanced because the car was driven, didn't really feel a problem because we hadn't accelerated hard in your car, for example. Visually, everything's okay. We'll balance the tyres, inflate them to the right pressure, and away you go. And the important thing there is to have that, and it goes on to number four here, have that ability to then say to the mechanic, look, I appreciate what you've done. It hasn't fixed my problem. Where do we go from here? Because we do this a lot. It happens to us. We'll fix something that's broken. Someone might come to us and say, I've got a rattle. We'll get under the car and the underbody cover's broken. So we'll fix it and send the car out because we don't hear any other rattle. The customer drives it on their, where they live, at their speed and where they drive.
Cobblestones or something. And
they hear it and, well, you haven't fixed it. Okay. Now, we will have sent pictures and justifications, if you like, for what we're about to do and got their approval to do it, but it still hasn't fixed the problem. Now, if that customer can then call back and just sort of say, appreciate what you did, but my problem's still there. We're going to have the conversation of, look, we need to go out together in it. If that customer calls back and says, you wasted my time and this and that, and I want my money back, I'm going to call the economic department, I'm going to leave a bad Google review, then I'm sorry, do all of those things, but you're on your own at that point because we're not here to rip anybody off. And the vast majority of garages aren't. The mistakes happen every day, but they're honest mistakes most of the time. And if you can have that relationship with your mechanic, I think some of my closest better customers are ones that have had problems with initial visits or second or third visits with us. And then myself or now DJ have then dealt with that issue in an ethical and fair and good customer service focused way to get that customer to realize that these guys are actually trying here and they're doing the best they can, and they made an honest mistake and they fixed it and I appreciate it. And then they'll come back. And then at that point, they trust us because they know, yeah, we will make a mistake, but we'll own it.
Look, there's a variety, and I want to touch on this point really quickly. There are a variety of different garages in any town.
Yeah.
Dubai, the UAE is a great example of, you have very affordable and economic garages that there might be some questions
about
the training. Training of some of those folks. And as you move up the ladder and you get to a level where you're at, and there are a number of marquee garages, I would call them, that exist, where you have trained, certified professionals who've come in from outside a country, who have documentation, and they are, this is what you studied to do. And I think that becomes really important for people to remember that this is a career just like anything else. And if you turn the tables and, I'm a professor and I'm coming to you as a mechanic, well, we both have careers. Do I expect you to be talking to me about my trade in a disrespectful way and questioning it and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? I have a lot of questions, but there's how you deal with people. And I think that's really important to understand.
Yeah. Most, if not all, of the customers that we have, unless they're a mechanic who just don't have a premises and they've gone into another trade while they're here because they've come here with their spouse or family and they're just doing any old job. Most of the customers that we have aren't mechanics. And most of them aren't hobbyists either. But almost, on the flip side of that, I can't do what they can do. So whether it be somebody that's a graphic designer for a marketing company, or whether it's somebody that repairs roofs, I can't do those things. And I wouldn't expect them to treat me in the right way if I was to tell them how to do their job. Now,
No, especially when they're a trained professional.
Exactly,
and as I said, there's the folks who are down here who jobbers, and have fallen into it. Maybe they went from a hobbyist to whatever they're doing, but you know, not that we're not talking someone's home garage. We're talking a marquee setup with a license, and it's a business, and you know, certifications.
There's a lot of scope for improvements across the whole industry all around the world, and certainly Dubai, the UAE, is no different in that regard. There could be improvements made from a regulatory aspect, and for people wanting to do it in the right way, it would be a massive, massive boon because so many places would close. However, that being said, at the moment, because of that, you as a customer, as a consumer of a mechanic's services, you need to be quite responsible with how you go about yourself in terms of where you take the vehicle, what conversations you have with people.
Well, and that becomes the question. I've had a number of folks who contact me because obviously we do this show. We're on 100.3. We're around the world. Spotify, you name it. We're on all streaming platforms. And they get in touch. And often there's a disproportionate number of women who get in touch because they're worried about getting taken advantage of as a customer at a garage, taken advantage in the sense of being fed a line of malarkey about what's the matter with their car. And I'm very quick to reassure these folks that, hold on, it's not just women who have this issue. Men put up a brave face that they know what they're talking about when they do not know anything.
This is purely anecdotal, and this is not, I'm not Jordan Peterson by any stretch. I've got no psychological understanding of this phenomenon, but it's just something I've noticed in my time. If I wanted to rip somebody off, con somebody, whatever you want to call it, in my trade, it's much easier to do that to a man.
Oh, it's much easier to rip off the guy.
And the reason for that is there's this machismo thing about cars, right? Men need to know how to fix their cars. Everybody of 30 and above has had a dad and or a granddad that fixed their own cars and serviced their own cars on their driveway at some point.
So for
men sort of 30 and above. So what you then get is you have the people that kind of have an interest in cars and think they should know about it, and they have a chats in the pub with their mates. So when they come in with their cars, they want to seem knowledgeable. And the way that that happens is they tend to agree to everything that you're saying. Whereas if you don't know anything, but you genuinely don't care that you don't know anything, you'll ask questions.
Right.
At the moment you can put your pride aside and ask a question, there is no stupid question. It might feel stupid asking it, but there isn't a stupid question. If you can do that and not worry about looking less of a man, quote unquote, you'll get the answers. And if you don't get the answers, then use your instincts and your common sense and be like, this guy can't answer the questions I'm asking, so I ain't going there.
And this is what I've constantly said to folks. And as I said, these people who get in touch, I said, look, go and have the chat, be forthright, be honest what you think the issues are. If you're not getting the answers that are satisfactory to you, if you can't understand what they're saying, I said, walk away.
If somebody ever came to our workshop and said they thought they'd been ripped off, and ripped off not through an honest mistake, but ripped off because a mistake was made and not compensated, or, you know, you've got a noise and somebody's told you it's the engine, and we tell you we've changed the engine, but all we've done is taken a piece of plastic out of the engine bay that was rattling, or whatever it may be. Regardless of it, if you genuinely have a belief of that, the person or persons responsible would be terminated the same day that you told me it had happened in my garage. And then I would take that to the full extent with the government and say, look, this person is no good for this country. We're trying to do good things here. This is a forward-facing, pioneering country. You don't want people like this here. What can we do to stop them working here? That would be what I would do, whether it was a man or woman or whoever it was that thought they'd been ripped off. It just won't happen here. We have a price for our work. We have a margin built into parts when we buy them that we sell them at. And there are other people that buy from different places and have different margins and less expenses, and they're much cheaper than we are. And there are other places that are much more expensive than we are. DJ's just gone to pick up our friend from Aston Martin. He's just dropped his car in there for the third time for an oil leak. But that's another story.
It's on
They're
watches,
not cheaper than me. Yeah. So if you've got a problem with price, have a chat with us. We'll talk about it. We're not trying to rip you off. That's just what we think is worth. So you don't forget.
Well, you know what? And I always say, I'm just interrupting you for a second. Be realistic. Look at what's the cost when you go to the dentist? What's it cost when you go to the physiotherapist? Yeah. What's it cost? And we're talking, you go to the osteo.
Have you ever asked for a discount at the dentist, James?
Never.
You ever asked for a discount at Carrefour?
Nope.
You ever asked for a discount at the restaurant?
No.
Ever ask for a discount anywhere?
No. Maybe when you're buying something in Knife.
Oh, yeah. Give me your best price.
What's the best price?
In the souk.
and you roll a calculator around and you put in another number.
But in terms of professional services, no. And our industry tends to be rife for that, as though people think they can still haggle. And I've got no problem with it. Like, what I believe is a fair price, you might have a disagreement with, and if we can come to an agreement, we will. If we can add extra value to it for you, we will. Like, every car that comes in here that has chrome exhaust tips, we'll polish them. We don't charge for it. It might take us 30 minutes, but we'll polish them. Every car that comes in here with faded headlights, if the customer hasn't requested it and we've done 1,000 dirhams plus of work on the car, we'll polish the headlights. There's places that charge 500-600 dirhams for that.
Hmm.
We'll do it for free.
Right. It's those little things.
We just try and add value to the, we'll pick the car up, we'll deliver the car for free. We aren't trying to rip people off by being more expensive than Joe Bloggs down the road. What we're trying to do is make a fair living and keep people on the road safely whilst doing it. And the thing is, if we go through these 5 points, the last one is key to kind of avoiding any problems in the future, but you've got, don't be vague about the problem, number one. Don't try and diagnose a problem yourself, number two. Don't withhold information about past repairs and mods, number three. Don't be disrespectful to the mechanic, number four. Number five, don't ignore the recommended service schedule. If you can do number five over everything, and then
number five should be number one.
And then as we started, make appointments whenever you need to get it in service and everything else. But if you can do your recommended maintenance, that's your responsibility. You have a right as the owner of a vehicle and as the customer of a garage to good service, but you have a responsibility to look after your vehicle properly. If the manufacturer recommends a service schedule, that's great. Stick to it. Now, that's not to say that shouldn't be fluid and flexible. So when it gets to a certain age, especially in our climate with a low oxygen density in the air, that service schedule needs to be coming tighter and tighter. So what might have been 15,000 kilometers should really be 10 after 5 years, let's say. That's not a garage trying to sell you more oil. That's a garage trying to keep you on the road fair and stop you having to replace a turbocharger or an engine. So, yeah, there are some responsibilities to it. And we are always happy to have the conversation with a customer about any aspect of our work that they want to know about, they want to understand more about, if they have a problem with, if they think, they could help with, well, my friend's got the same car and he had this, or like in your instance, James, you could bring one of the Wranglers in and say, okay, I've got this noise. I had it a year ago on the other one and it was this. Do you just want to check it out for me? Perfectly reasonable, right? So it's all relative to a situation. And if you can keep to your service schedule and you can keep that cordial relationship with the garage, whether man, woman, just do it. And I think there are plenty enough garages out here that are good that there's no reason anybody should have bad experience these days.
Well, and look, when you find your garage and you find that person you can trust, stick with them.
Yeah.
And you're going to always have friends say, I got this other place I'm going to. And there's always a tendency to want to push over. I strongly discourage that. Stay with the people who know your car and that you've got that relationship with, because you've cultivated that.
Yeah.
And ultimately, that's what we try to do here on this show is when it comes to relationships and it comes to understanding what's going on. That's the purpose of this. The purpose is so that when you go into whatever garage you're going to and you've got questions, you've heard us ramble on, you've heard Glenn define some of these issues, you've heard him talk about things, so that you can ask the pertinent questions. And I, as we keep saying, I'll say it again, if your service manager, your mechanic can't entertain your questions, can't solve them, can't answer the questions, walk away.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just not, it's not the right place to be.
One sort of piece of advice I would give people is I always, and we do here, we offer no obligation second opinions. Obviously, we can't.
That's a cool idea.
Obviously, we can't strip somebody's engine down and take DTI measurements of crankshafts for free.
Right.
But we can give reasonable visual second opinions on cars. Now,
that's a, I mean, I've never heard of garages doing that.
I think there are others that
do. I'm sure they do. Yeah. They just, it's just not something I've ever had to avail of.
Now, we obviously do it because we like to. We like to think that if we give a genuine opinion and that there's no bad outcome. Yeah. If we give an opinion that differs to the other garage, if they've said you need an engine and we say you just need an oil change, we're probably going to get the business out of the oil change. So, you know, as capitalist as that sounds, we're a business and that's great. But if we say, no, no, it does need an engine, then you know what? The industry's looking good in somebody's eyes because they're not trusting the first person. So they've gone to the second person, but the second person's confirmed it. So the person that might be having an issue saying, oh, I don't think this garage is right. I think they're trying to rip me off. Someone else has told them that they're right. And then faith has been restored, right? So there's no real bad outcome to it. And we don't always get, you know, the jobs. But what tends to happen more than people actually bringing their cars for us to check is they'll send us a quote with the prices blanked out and ask us for the prices.
Yeah.
And it's a bit of a, it's a bit of a fool's errand really on our part, because we're either going to be more expensive or less expensive. And if we're less expensive, how much less expensive does it need to be worth your while? Because you've got to pick the car up, you've got to pay them for what they've done, you've got to bring it in. You know, we're not thousands percent more expensive than anyone else. There might be 5% here and there, 10% here and there. So what are we really going to save you? So that's where, you know, if you ask somebody to just price match, we don't do price matching. There are obviously long-standing customers.
You do that at the grocery store. You do that at the grocery store.
Yeah, there are long-standing customers that we'll look after, but we can't do that for everybody. And if somebody wants our service, they want our level of service, not our cost. If you're only price sensitive, then there are hundreds of places on our road that you can go to that we'll happily point out for you.
Umrumul. I go by Umrumul all the time. And I got to say, I've driven by a few garages recently. Our dog kennels out there. And I drove by one a couple of days ago. And first thing I said is, why doesn't PowerWorks have a satellite in Umrumul? Mostly selfishly because it's close to my house.
Well, because every year they keep saying they could flatten it.
Yeah.
I was at AAA and they kept getting it. They had a notice saying that you're on a indefinite, we might bulldoze this soon and put a gardens in it.
Well, I think there's one part of Umrumul closest to Festival City and the Dubai Duty Free stuff where there's no longer any cars parked on the road and parked on the medians. And then when you get three quarters of the way down, just past where AAA is, and there's another towing service, SMS or UM, I don't know, they're orange and tan towers, giant vehicles as well. Really looks like competition with the folks over at AAA. Then there's all the cars are back, and all the garages have all the everything parked there. So it's a weird situation. But I was driving by, and there were a couple Volkswagen vans, but we're talking, they could be fairly new from Mexico, but they were, you know, all glass window things, old style. And I was tempted to pull over and see which garage was handling them, just to see, you know, what are these things? What are you looking at? And as I easily could drive one of those.
Yeah. Cool. Real cool. And we mentioned that we've got people from Talk 100.3 contacting us. Somebody contacted me the other day and said, I'd heard you talk about Volkswagen vans on the podcast and on the radio, and I've got one that needs looking after. Can you give me a price for something? And they sent us the details through. So it's sounds like we talk about them a lot, but
yeah,
they're really good. They're just
iconic. Yeah. You know, and I mean they're on the car chassis, so it drives like a car, looks like a van. One was blue, one was orange. I thought, oh man. So I got to cruise back down and just take a look. But the problem it's not a marquee garage that it's in front of. So
no, you know what? Right? In all fairness, there are a few little quirks on them, and they are quite complex in some things, but they are, as with most commercial vehicles, they're quite basic in terms of level of repairs required. And it just makes sense if you're a fleet owner and you need to put cars in your fleet that they need to be easy and cheap to repair and maintain. And we're not far removed, although it's getting less and less common and more rare for fleets to have their own servicing arms. You know, there are big companies in the free zones and stuff here that have their own garages in there that look after their own fleets, but it's less and less common these days. It wasn't always the case. So vehicles were made to be able to fix by the owner of the vehicle. Like, a lot of American cars are still like that. You know, take an F-150, an example. Oh, there are some days. Crazy things on them now, like vacuum operated hub locks,
yeah.
Which, I mean, what people are supposed to do on the driveway with those, yeah. I don't know. But, yeah. You know, most of the things are relatively straightforward, yeah. And there's that whole thing with the US with the right to repair.
Oh, I mean, I even to this day, you know, I always think of my Uncle Joe, who, you know, he's kind of like a Colin. Yeah. He's you and Colin combined, because he's the auction guy,
right?
But he also does all the repairs in his garage. He's actually got a pit in his garage, and I'm pretty sure he's got a pit in his garage. Someone will correct me. One of the Salikans, or he's a Ritzand, so Joe Ritzand, he'll correct me on this. But you know, he's doing all these repairs.
Yeah,
and you do them at home. And you know, look, you got to have some of the specialized tools, but those are easy to get by. There's all sorts of places you can buy them.
eBay and Amazon and what have you. Yeah.
Heck, you just have to go to the parts place by your house.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
it's pretty basic. Hey, I want to touch back on something moving forward a little bit here. Is if people who've been listening to the podcast, people who've been listening to the show have heard us talking about EVs, and we've had a lot of conversations about battery life and charging issues, and it, all good conversation to keep in mind as we move towards more and more EVs out there. Yeah. Nice little article that I read a while back from the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation talking about Sudbury, Ontario, winter electric vehicles, cold temperatures there, range destroyed.
It's
like here with the heat.
Yeah, temperature and electrical circuits don't do well. They obviously, you know, there's an effect on resistance with temperature. And the problem is with this that you put in the notes there, up to 30%.
Yeah, can you imagine? Now talk about the anxiety that kicks in if you're driving. I mean, if you don't know where Sudbury, Ontario is, we're talking, if you know Toronto, yeah, keep going north. We're talking just 5-6 hours cold. North. It's chilly. It's beautiful in the summer. If you want to go fishing, it's phenomenal. Hunting, you're going to go snowmobiling in the winter, phenomenal. But it can be cold and wintry for a, you know, good 6 months of the year. I mean, there's a cycle, right? It does warm up. But you don't want to have your vehicle in a situation where it's losing charge because it's minus 10 or 20. That doesn't work. And yeah.
I don't know. Like, because, you know, an average sort of range, 500-600 kilometer range on an EV, and then you've got 30% removed for the temperature, plus you've got the fact that this year it does 500 kilometers, but next year it might do 420.
Well, that's it, because it's like a phone, right?
The battery year life. After it's doing 360, yeah. And then the year after it's doing 320, and then you remove 30%, and all of a sudden you're down to 220.
Yeah. And it's like, okay, this is not what I signed
up
for.
That's not great, is it?
No, no.
So that is a concern. I don't know how they fix that. I don't know what you do with that. I mean, do you have block heaters, but battery heaters? What's the deal with it? I mean, that's not very environmentally friendly. If you've got your electric vehicle with a propane block heater underneath it, so I don't know what would be done about it. I always think, oh, it can't be oversight. They've obviously got something in there, but it could be. It could just be, well, we didn't know. We rushed them out, and now we're dealing with the issues.
I legitimately think there could be some oversight there. I think automobile manufacturers are very cognizant of the hot weather And as they're designing these vehicles and they're thinking about these vehicles, they're thinking of warm weather. But then when it gets to cold weather, I think while I know they test and they do what they need to do, I sometimes think they feel that that's less of an issue than the hot weather.
Look, I mean, in it's been years, but if you think about your time in Canada with a car, if the battery was going to fail, it's a 12-volt battery, it's an acid battery, but it was failing in the winter, in the depth of the winter and the cold, right?
Yeah.
Like in here it fails at the heat, in the peak of the heat in the summer.
So they must, I can't be oversight. It just can't be oversight.
I think, you always think that. It's like, when you think of an invention, you think, oh, someone must have invented that before. And, it hasn't. I mean, I think it's very possible we didn't know. And they've been rushed out. Tesla became fashionable. It was what the iPhone was to a mobile phone. It changed. All of a sudden, mobile phones don't have batteries and they're all rectangles with glass fronts and backs. So all the manufacturers that make cars were like, well, this kid needs putting back in his place, so we better start making EVs. And, they have been rushed out, and maybe it was just a matter of,
maybe they'll build a heater into it that runs off the battery itself.
But you're using the battery power to keep it warm to save your range. It just doesn't, is there a way that when it's plugged in on charge, there's something that will run while it's charging, but then you need it to be cooled down while it's charging because you're getting hot.
Battery technology. This is, battery. We've got a whole new area of engineering that we've always been thinking about it, but now it's really in the foreground, and that is battery engineers and alternative power engineers. And that's a very specific field, and I'm not sure how many people there are in that field who are doing the innovation at this point. So it's an interesting one.
Yeah, I think we just have to be very careful with the next sort of the next two or three steps on the environmental development, shall we say, of the motor industry, environmentally conscious development of the motor industry. Because let's not forget, petrol and diesel engines, whilst polluting, are far less polluting than they were 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. It's night and day. So I am sure, just like a mobile phone that we just mentioned, and with internal combustion, engineers will get batteries for EVs to a level where we don't have these concerns, or they're not as much of a concern. The issue with EVs is they still require raw materials, and these raw materials aren't exactly easy to get hold of.
They're raw materials that are scarce, scarce materials as well.
Yeah, so it becomes, is it really something that's worth putting all this engineering might into? And, that remains to be seen, and I don't know that that's something that will be answered that quickly, because you've just got, the big sort of Western countries that are pushing for the EVs because of the environmental benefits, again, quote unquote. Governments change every 3-4 years. So whose incentive is it? Who cares? Who really has that, we will go to the moon by the end of this decade? Who has that mentality anymore? You're not going to be in power. Certainly, if you're prime minister in the UK, you'll be out in 6 weeks. So what's the point? What is the point? And that, unfortunately, is how it goes. And it does require a political solution and a political movement. But people don't have the longevity to do that. So you look into places like, where a lot of this manufacturing happens, China, where they're pretty much single ruler for the rest of his life, I would think. They can make a difference on it. But they've got millions and millions of people literally below the poverty line.
Yeah.
So what benefit have they got to stop people burning fossil fuels? Yeah. Because then you're going to literally kill people because they've got no heat.
No, it's a challenge.
So it's a real big problem. And I don't think that an EV at this moment in time is a worthy solution. Obviously, we've mentioned hydrogen before. That still requires engineering. That still requires improvements. So it's an interesting one. have we stopped improving the efficiency of internal combustion? Is that something that's now stopped?
The wankle's coming back, so no, we haven't.
Well, yeah.
Everyone wants a wankle.
Problem with the wankle. Problem with the wankle is...
This is the Mazda. The Mazda wankle rotary engine.
The problem with the wankle engines is, always has been, that they flood.
Yes.
So then you just sat there wankling yourself silly in a petrol station after you filled it up. And that's no good to anybody. So...
Oh, man.
Yeah, I think...
But you'd think the engineers have gone back and they've got an idea. Maybe.
Yeah, you're maybe. Not, but then is sold. It... That's what my point is it worth it?
Yeah,
is exactly. It really worth it? Is... You've already got, I mean, Porsche put a release out the other day of they've worked out or are working on and have good results on a fuel made from water to power a Porsche.
Is that hydrogen?
And it's like, okay, now that seems a bit better, doesn't it? Like, we can work that one out. I mean, if you were told, well, you can only do 200 kilometers range, but all you have to do is put water in the tank. Aside from driving through the Sahara or Death Valley or somewhere like that, you're probably going to be cool with that because you get water pretty much anywhere. But when your battery's struggling in the middle of Death Valley and all you can see is horizon on the straight road both ways, there ain't no supercharger network, what do you do?
So here's one that when we talk about going back to old engineered ideas for engines... The diesel engine, but there was a version of diesel, and correct me if I'm wrong, because maybe I've misunderstood this, or maybe it was a regular gas engine, but I'm thinking it's a diesel engine that was able to run off refined cooking oil.
Yeah, biodiesel, yeah.
Biodiesel. Why aren't we pushing more of that? Like, I mean,
it still has an emission. That's the problem. The biodiesel solved the solution of the decreasing amount of crude oil.
Okay, because there's lots of chippies. There's a lot of falafel being fried. Yeah. So there's a lot of raw material here.
I mean, I used to watch. I don't have to check. I'm gonna have to check if the new series has been put out. But I used to watch Mountain Men, right, on Discovery Channel or whatever it was on, History Channel, I think. And then Eustace on there, he had a truck that he converted to run off of burning wood chippings.
Even better.
Amazing. That's, I mean, his house was literally
that's
in the
that's
like
something Joey would do. Joey woo woo.
Yeah, 400 acres of woodland. So he was like fuel for free forever.
So he's got the pickup full of chips, and he just keeps firing in like an old coal engine.
There was always ways to power vehicles, but biodiesel solved the problem of, well, fuel prices were going up and diesels becoming harder and harder to get.
Oh, I just like it. He uses the oil up that McDonald's alone. How much oil are they going through? I mean, they change it every day.
They make make fuel now out of recycled tires. So they make anything that's sort of come from a form of oil is possible to use as fuel. Oil has a calorific value, right? So you can get energy out of it. And biodiesel, I think for a while some of the VWs would run on up to 10% biodiesel. So they're up to 10% mix of biodiesel, but then you limit your ability to clean and filter the exhaust gases. Just the way you do that, the biodiesel gives too much of a waste product, solid waste product.
So there's a problem.
So on diesel particulate filters, for example, it was screwing them up.
Okay.
And
so we need more engineering here.
Again, but that, you know, I think certainly from Europe, anyone that's driven a diesel, I was having a conversation with a customer yesterday who wants to buy a car and he was looking at an A4, and I've had them in the UK and I said, look, you do realize that they're not diesel here. He's always had diesel in the UK. Anyone that's driven like a VW or a Peugeot diesel, Peugeot sort of went off the boil a little bit in the last 15 years, but they were very, very good. Something about a diesel engine, and they were very good. And they were powerful. They were very torquey. They did so many. I mean, a 2004 Golf that DJ had, I remember driving to Skegness, which is a coastal town. I don't know how many miles from where we are. It used to take about 3 hours, say, and do 60-odd to the gallon.
Wow, that's amazing.
60 miles to the gallon in, on a 2004 car.
That's amazing.
Like, come on.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then after that, they put DPFs. That was before DPF, so the gen after that had cleaner emissions still.
I just like the idea of you've got the chippy oil in there, so it always smells like a French fry truck.
You could have run DJs on a bit more of a mix of bio, because there was no DPF on it. And
everywhere you're going, it smells like chips.
Just donuts in front of
you. Yeah, donuts. Wouldn't that be...
Yeah. But they did have a bit of a smell. It was more like popcorn, actually.
Okay.
I remember when we had them in.
We've got to revisit this. Glenn, I hate to do this. We have not talked about Jenna's Pajero. We're going to put that at the top of the next show.
Special on Jenna's Pajero.
Jenna's Pajero and modifications, and how far don't we want to go with modifications on a vehicle. And I'm going to send you some pictures of a Toyota Land Cruiser that's around the corner from my place that... has been sitting there for 2 weeks. I'm thinking overmodded. So we'll, it's
that's
beautiful.
That's
it
crazy.
Looks good though.
If a Land Cruiser is overmodded, I don't know what they've done.
Yeah, this is an old one though. It kind of looks like, it almost looks like a Land Rover. So yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Real old FJ.
Yeah. Nice. So we'll send that. I'll send that by. But we're going to pick that up. We're going to talk modifications next time around. It's been a lot of fun.
It's been good.
Thank you very much, as always. And thanks for the folks who are listening to us via the radio, 100.3. Thanks to everyone who's tuning in online through any streaming service. Get in touch with us all the same way, podaholics@gmail.com. Send through your questions, queries, comments. Rate us if you get a chance. And we'll be back. We look forward to talking to you. Oh, if you're listening to us, by the way, you can also watch us on YouTube, the James Casts. These shows are posted in video format. So give us a look. Once again, Glenn, Powerworks Garage, thank you very much.
Thank you.